Welcome to Ballot Battleground Nevada. I'm your host, Ben Marjot, a reporter at KRNV News 4 in Reno. I'm passionate about making politics in this critical battleground state more digestible to the average voter and pushing past the talking points to press politicians for answers. On this show, we take deep dives into the people, ideas, and debates shaping Silver State politics. We matter. That's the slogan made famous by this week's guest, John Ralston, the CEO and editor of the Nevada Independent, a nonprofit news outlet providing some of the best coverage of the Silver State. As we heard last week, Nevada will, of course, matter in the general election, but we mattered quite a bit less during this presidential nominating cycle. We brought John in to talk about 2024, those early Biden-Trump polls, and the first year of Governor Joe Lombardo's administration. Here's our conversation with John Ralston. John, thank you so much for coming by the studio today. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Ben. Good to be with you.
This is your old stomping grounds, right? You used to have a show here for many years. Do you miss it?
I don't miss being on TV, but it did bring back a lot of good memories when I walked through the door here. We had a lot of fun doing that show.
Tell our viewers and listeners about it, because it was before my time, probably before many of their time, when you were on the News 4 airwaves.
Yeah, I did a show that was at the time for both NBC affiliates, North and South. And it was a nightly show, and you talk about a grind, Ben, preparing for a nightly interview show. And we interviewed a lot of different people, and we had a lot of fun doing it. And during the campaigns, during the legislature, we got a lot of great guests, and it was just, you know this, there's nothing like, and this is what I loved about doing TV, and it's different from print, which is where I cut my teeth, in the sense that you have someone sitting there, you know, kind of like you have me now, mm-hmm. captive for 20, 25 minutes, and the person has to answer your questions, and you really bring out a lot of things in an interview like that, I think, and I love doing it. I was on TV different places for about 16 years, but that was about enough.
It was a great show as far as people have told it to me. But again, before my time in Reno, if you ever want to come back, of course, the door is always open.
I appreciate yeah. that, Ben.
Before we get into the meat of today's interview, wanted to just check in on the Indy, your publication that you've been running for 6 or 8 years now. Unfortunately, difficult times financially. Had to lay off a couple of people a few weeks ago. How you guys doing? And obviously, it was devastating news for us to hear in terms of the state of journalism in Nevada.
You know, this is going on all over the country, Ben, and I guess I was hoping it would never hit here. The economics for journalism are not great these days, and we probably expanded too fast. We started 7 years ago in January with about six people. We got up to about 23, 24, and that was probably too fast, and I regret that. All of the responsibility is mine for this, but I had to make some very difficult decisions to make sure that the Indy survived, and so I did have to lay off four people, and we cut salaries, and I'm not taking a salary now, and so for the foreseeable future, because we're going to get the ship righted. We still have a great core of young reporters, and you know a lot of them, Ben, and we're going to cover this election like no other outlet is going to cover this election, and I hope by the end of the year I can come back and tell you a very different story.
Yeah, looking forward to hearing that for sure. And for our listeners and viewers who might not know, the Indy has been, as I mentioned on the last time we had you on virtually, a great resource. Riley, Michelle, Tabitha, you name it, some great reporters. And specifically for Riley, Michelle, give them a shout out, because my first session in the legislature, and it's such an overwhelming experience being down there with some pros like them. I learned so much from them. So
whatever failures I might have, I did play matchmaker with Riley and Michelle. They did get married during their time at the Indy, and just had a baby and another one way. And they're two of the greatest people and best journalists I know. They essentially run the place. But don't tell anybody I said that, Ben.
Fair enough. I'll keep it between us. So the dust has now settled from the first presidential preference primary in a couple of decades in Nevada. I think the last one was in the 1980s or so. We, of course, and you guys did too, covered the chaos and the confusion that surrounded the caucus and the primary and which people should vote in which. I mean, looking back on it now with the dust having settled, how do you think that went? And do you think it's that new election, the PPP, presidential preference primary, is something that ultimately will be a good thing moving into the future, even if it was a little chaotic this time?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't so much the primary that was the problem. It was that the Republicans decided to have two different votes. The state law is now a primary. As you mentioned, it was switched. We've been doing that for decades with the caucus. It was switched by a Democratic legislature in 2021, although several Republicans voted for it. But then the Republican Party leadership decided that they didn't want to have a primary. They gave all kinds of different reasons. But the problem is, Ben, is it created all kinds of confusion, not just among you and me and people who follow politics, but of course among voters who couldn't understand why there were two votes. The national media made fun of us. And then the worst thing of all happened, right? In the primary, none of the above, none of these candidates, yeah, this unique Nevada animal won. And so that became an occasion for further mockery because they had set up the caucus to make sure that Trump won, which of course is ridiculous because he was going to win the primary too. They just didn't want to leave anything to chance. But the bottom line is, I like to tell people, and I have for years, as you know, how much we matter in presidential politics, and we certainly will in November, but we became an early state, and this really took us off the map. Nikki Haley didn't pay attention to us. Trump didn't need to because his agents were fixing it. And of course, in on the Democratic side, Biden was always going to win in a landslide. So you hear it now, and it's frustrating to me, Ben. I wince whenever I'm watching national programs. They talk about, well, there was Iowa and New Hampshire and then South Carolina, and they don't even talk about us, right? And so that's really, really too bad. I hopefully, 4 years from now, it'll be different, and I'm glad we're still so important for November. We're one of six or seven states that'll determine the next president, but as far as an early state this time, we did not matter.
We did not matter officially from John Ralston.
Can we edit this? You would say Can we edit this, Ben? Wait a second. He edited a knot in there.
We did not matter. Wow. Okay. Quite the proclamation from the person that, you know, invented the We Matter slogan. But I mean, it was weird for me because we're used to, or at least in the previous couple cycles here, run around covering campaign events in 2020. It was Bernie. It was Joe Biden. It was Pete Buttigieg. You name it. And it was just so quiet this time. It was unusual in the lead up to that election. As you mentioned, anchors weren't even mentioning Nevada. It's just a bummer for the process. But, at least the election went off smoothly from the PPP side. I mean, do you think generally, though, moving forward, it's something Democratic lawmakers or lawmakers across the state are going to keep in place? And is something that ultimately maybe the Republicans come around to, and we have this unified process in the future?
Yeah, I think caucuses have become a relic of the past in general. I mean, Iowa still has its tradition, but a caucus just is not the most democratic form of balloting, even though people like to say it's the ultimate grassroots experience. You go in with your neighbors and debate, but that's not even really what the Republicans did. It was a hybrid where you could just go and vote and leave, right, which isn't really a caucus. So do I think it'll remain? I do. Whether there'll be reforms to the process, people will propose things like no early vote or voter ID or all the usual debates that we've heard. I guess we should mention it didn't quite go off without a hitch,
sure,
in the sense that there was this glitch where people who didn't vote had their voter histories indicate that they had voted by mail. It was a coding error. It didn't affect anyone on the other side. They're two separate programs, one for voting history, one for actual votes. But of course, now some of the people who want to cast doubt on the Secretary of State's ability to run elections are using this, which is unfortunate. And it's a very bad look for the Secretary of State, who is a Democrat, Cisco Aguilar, this is his first election, essentially, and he had this happen. But it's been overblown, I think, and I think it'll blow over.
It was a bummer, certainly, because not only were many people questioning the process and the confusion with the two different elections, but then we have, as the dust is settling, this issue with voter history. And at this time in 2024, there are a few things we need less than more confusion and doubt cast into the election process. But let's turn ahead to 2024 in the June primary and in the November general, since that's what's ahead for us. Candidate filing as we record this on Tuesday. It's day two. We've seen a handful of candidates sign up. They have another week or so to do that. Any surprises so far that you've seen, or is it pretty much gone off as expected as we kick off primary season?
There haven't been a lot of surprises so far, but one thing I've learned from doing this for far too long, Ben, is that there will be surprises, I think, in two ways. People who have announced candidacies, and that has gone on, and you and I have covered these people announcing that they're running for something. Some of those people are going to end up not filing
right. Because
they didn't get the support. They couldn't raise money. They'll end up not filing. There will be some surprises there. But inevitably in Nevada, it happens. Someone relatively well-known or very well-known is going to decide at the last minute to file. I would bet that happens. It's usually in the second week or even on the last day of filing. The one interesting thing that happened that I don't think he has filed yet as of this recording is on the eve of filing, you had a guy named Marty O'Donnell, who I had never heard of, but apparently is a legend in the composing game, especially with video games for Halo, and he's written some other jingles. Very wealthy guy in his late 60s who's decided to run for one of the congressional seats down south. Are we allowed to talk about stuff that goes on down south?
We're absolutely allowed to talk about it.
I forgot to ask about the rules. But seriously, and so the Republicans really don't have a good candidate in that race. It's Nevada's swing district. The other districts are either very Democratic or very Republican up here, the second district. And so I think some Republicans think that he has a chance to beat Susie Lee if he can win that primary. But it's very, very early. But he's certainly a surprise.
You mentioned these surprises. I think it was 2 years ago that Danny Tarkanian, I believe on the last day of filing, said he was going to run against Mark Amaday. We'll see if we get another surprise this cycle. Briefly, for our Northern Nevada listeners and viewers that might not be as steeped in the Southern Nevada politics, the other congressional district that is closer to a swing district, Stephen Horsford's down there. Any notable candidates that have jumped in on the Republican side to run against him?
Some Republicans think that district is winnable. You may recall that Stephen Horsford actually lost there in an off year in 2014. It was a big upset. This is a presidential year where turnout is higher and the natural Democratic demographics of the district will help him. But some Republicans think John Lee, who's a former mayor of North Las Vegas, ran for governor last cycle and has said he's going to run again, has a chance against Horsford. He does have some bedrock support, of course, as the former mayor of North Las Vegas in North Las Vegas, which is the bulk of that district, but also in the rural counties where Horsford doesn't run as well. Very big, sprawling district, Ben, that he has a chance. I still think it's a long shot. I think Horsford's a big favorite in that race.
Moving on to the Nevada Senate race, the big one. 2 years ago, it was the Nevada Senate race, Catherine Cortez Masto's seat, that decided control of the U.S. Senate on that weekend, could potentially shape up that way this cycle. Jackie Rosen's seat, she's an incumbent only in her first term now, running for her second term. And there's a crowded Republican field on the other side. But as it stands right now, it seems that Sam Brown has emerged as the front runner. He ran against Adam Laxalt in the last cycle. Cook Political Report, who I had on last week, said that it's a lean Dem seat. How do you rate that race? What do you think about that Nevada Senate race?
Well, the Cook Political Report is the gold standard, and I happen to agree with them that it's lean D, only in the sense that, listen, what's interesting, Ben, is that 6-8 years ago, nobody had heard of Jackie Rosen.
Right.
Until Harry Reid made her his 13th, 14th choice for that seat. They couldn't find anyone to run for Congress in that district, and she ran and won, then immediately ran for the Senate and won right after that in 2018. And now, as you mentioned, she's running for re-election the first time. She should be very vulnerable. And she is vulnerable. We're a purple state. You mentioned Catherine Cortez Masto. She won by 8,000 votes. Yeah. The election was not decided until well after Election Day because of all the mail ballots that helped her win. Jackie Rosen is not nearly as seasoned a politician as Catherine Cortez Masto, but she has raised a ton of money. That's one thing she learned from Harry Reid.
Sure.
I mean, she has a huge war chest, but so much outside money is going to come in. It's going to keep KRNV and other TV stations in business.
And we appreciate it. Yes.
And during the election season, Sam Brown has a chance against Jackie Rosen, just because I think if you're not crazy and you can get some crossover votes as a Republican in this state, you have a chance to win a statewide race. I still think she's the favorite. I don't think Sam Brown's a lock to win that primary. I think he will. Hmm. He has the most money. He's running against Jim Marchant, who is full-on MAGA and a conspiracy theorist, and Jeff Gunter, who is a former Trump ambassador. Now, neither of them have filed yet as we're doing this podcast. So I'm not sure that they will both file. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. Sam Brown could beat Jackie Rosen, and I think it's going to be one of the most watched races in the country. Sam Brown's got a great story to tell, right? War hero. But he also has never won a race, and he hasn't been in Nevada that long. And so I think he's a slight underdog. So just going looping back to the beginning, I think the Cook Political Report is right on this.
They tend to be right on and spot on. We'll see, of course, in this race. So just going over some of the polls in that race, there was a recent one that showed that Jackie Rosen was leading all the candidates, but she was leading Sam Brown by the smallest margin of those of the Republican field by just 2 points. I mean, do you see him as the most likely to threaten Jackie Rosen for that seat if he comes out of that primary?
I think he's a viable candidate if he can come out of that primary. I thought Adam Laxalt was not as strong a candidate as a lot of Republicans nationally thought he was. But Sam Brown is almost a totally unknown quantity in a major race. Sure, he ran in the primary against Adam Laxalt, much different. And by the way, even though he raised a lot of money in that race through grassroots, which was impressive, he still got crushed in that. I think he lost by about 20 points. I don't remember. You may. And so he doesn't have a track record of success. And so to make a U.S. Senate race your first win is very, very difficult to do. He's run in Texas before he came here and did not win. But as I said, he's got a great story to tell. It's even less, Ben, these days in politics for the federal races, especially Senate races, much more about the outside money. Hmm. And if the national Republicans make a commitment to this race, there's going to be tens of millions of dollars of outside money coming into that race. And so, as I said, anyone who's not like a far-right candidate who the Democrats can easily attack is going to have a chance.
And Sam Brown, certainly, as we've seen already, attempting to moderate his position on abortion, and presumably that will happen as if he does emerge from the primary, we get into general election mode. Let's switch gears, though, talk about the presidential race, where a Republican hasn't won in Nevada in something like 20 years, but as of now, most, if not all, the Nevada polls, granted it's early, it's March, show Trump with 5 to 7 to 10 point leads here in the Silver State. You're known to dig into the crosstabs and get really deep, because I think the horse race here in March is less important than the issues that are going to matter and how different demographic groups are talking to pollsters and what they're feeling. What have you gleaned from looking into those polls in the crosstabs? Because you love those.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of the crosstabs are really crazy. In fact, my great D.C. reporter, Gabby Berenbaum, found the last crosstab. She found the Hispanic crosstab that showed Trump up by 45 points over Biden among Hispanics, which is just crazy. But Democrats here, even though I don't believe any of those polls necessarily, I do believe in trends, and every poll showing Trump ahead. Democrats here who know what's going on are worried. They're worried about the state shifting slightly rightward. And I think the state's a toss-up. And there are scenarios, by the way, Ben, in which it can be 266 to 266, and then Nevada's electoral votes decide who becomes the next president. So speaking of a ton of money being spent here, and there already is money being spent here, I think we're going to see a lot of visits from both sides. You've seen Kamala Harris come to Nevada again this weekend.
Yeah,
I think this is like her fourth or fifth trip here in the last 3 or 4 months. You're going to see a lot of that. Nevada. This I can tell you for sure, Ben. Nevada is going to matter in November.
Absolutely. You talk about trends, voter registration trends. Depending on what we can glean from that show, it getting tighter and tighter here, whereas, you know, this several years ago, Democrats had a far more significant lead when it comes to how many registered Democrats and how many registered Republicans are in the state. Where do things stand now? Because that lead has really dwindled, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was just a few cycles ago that Democrats had 5 or 6% lead statewide. That's now about 1.5%. So that's significant movement. But it's not necessarily because the Republicans have done anything. It's because the non-major party voters in this state have exploded. They are the plurality now. Down in Clark County, where, sorry, Ben, most of the votes are, I think it's 42%. Of registered voters are now non-major party voters. Wow. I mean, this is not the Nevada that I covered in 1986 when I started out. I'm dating myself now. But the real issue here is, who are these people, right? Who are these independent voters? Mark Melman, very well-known pollster, once told me there's no such thing as an independent voters. They're either Democrat or Republican leaning, sure, masquerading as independent. There's something to be said for that. And one of the reasons Joe Lombardo is governor is he was able to find those Republican leaning independents, or at least enough of them to win the race. So who can mine the data? Who can get the right message out to these independents? And by the way, a lot of those, I think, Ben, are what I call dead voters, not literally dead. But
be careful here, John.
Yeah, I'm trying to be careful here. I'll get some of the conspiracy theorists after us. But most of those voters, maybe two-thirds of them, at least half, maybe two-thirds, are people who went into the DMV to register. Sure. And the way the law is written, the motor voter, so-called motor voter law, they are defaulted to independent if they don't register with a political party. They may not even know they're registered. They may not have any interest in politics at all. And so which party, which campaigns are able to find the ones who are really active voters and plan to vote, those are the ones who are going to win those races.
Absolutely. Those nonpartisans now, as of February, 33.35% of the electorate. So over a third officially, I believe, as of February, which is just staggering for people that have been watching these trends for many years now, like you. Let's segue into the Lombardo administration, because you have an event this week. It's why you're in town visiting us here in Northern Nevada. That's dealing right with the blizzard conditions.
Yes.
At your event at the Automobile Museum, Indy Talks event, sitting down with the governor. We haven't had many chances recently to sit down with the governor to talk about his first year in office. So I'm jealous that you get the chance.
Mm-hmm. You can cover the event, Ben.
Of course. Okay. And we absolutely plan to be there for sure. What are you hoping to get out of this event? What most are you looking to talk to him about?
You know, and you know this when you're preparing for interviews, Ben. You know, you have a list of questions and a list of topics, and then after you do the interview, you're always frustrated, like you got like a third of the way down the list, and how did you not get to it? So there's a lot I want to ask him about. I'm really interested in how he assesses his own performance. And it's hard to give him a real grade now, except incomplete, right? To be fair to him, he's only been in office since January of 2023. But I'm really interested looking back what he sees, what he learned from his first session, what he thinks are the real accomplishments of the first session, what his relationships are with these legislators now who he was at loggerheads with, and even more interested in what he plans on doing in this campaign year. Because, you know, you've asked about a lot of the important races. We've talked about the presidential race, we've talked about the Senate race and House races, but the governor's almost sole focus, maybe even obsession, is with the legislative races, where the Democrats are one vote away from having a supermajority in both houses. And if that happens, they can do whatever they want, override the governor's veto, and he may as well go, as I've said, to Maui, because he's not going to be able. And so I think he's very concerned about that. I'll be very interested to see what he says about that, and see if he'll paint kind of an apocalyptic picture in his mind of what the state would be like if Democrats had a supermajority in Carson City.
Yeah, in 2023, it was such that, as you mentioned, one vote shy of that supermajority. And so he was able to veto, I believe it was 75 bills, like an all-time record. Yeah. No Nevada governor had ever vetoed that many bills. So if the Democrats just flip one additional seat in the Senate or the Assembly?
Senate. But they also have to hold what they have in the Assembly. And so there are about 6, 8, maybe 10 max races of all the races on the ballot that are going to matter, Ben. And there's going to be a tremendous amount of resources spent by the Democrats to get that extra seat and by the Republicans to make sure that they don't.
And since it is an off year from the legislature, as you say, it can become, if not his sole focus, certainly at the top of his priority list, focusing on some of those races. Any race in particular in the state Senate that is going to be easiest to flip for the Democrats?
I think they're looking to flip, and it's a race up here. Heidi Gansert, longtime Republican state senator, is not running again. That seat is open. I think that the demographics of that district suggests that a Democrat can win, and there aren't many Democratic senators who are vulnerable, which is the real problem for the Republicans. So if they are able to flip Gansert's seat, they'll probably have a supermajority.
Senate District 15, there was a ton of money spent in that race when the last time it was up, and Heidi Gansert was able to hold on to that seat, but now it's open. I haven't heard who's running just yet, but that'll be something that...
You got to check the filings.
Absolutely. We'll be checking every single day. Do you plan to ask him about some of the vetoes and kind of press him for answers? Because it's one thing that we haven't been able to get to ask him. You know, he vetoed things like universal school lunches and some ghost gun bills and other firearms-related measures that were passed by the Democratic legislature?
Yeah, I mean, some of the dividing issues and some of the most important issues in the state were affected by his vetoes, right? And you mentioned a couple of them, gun control, education. There's certainly big differences in education between the governor and Democrats. And of course, some of the ones that made the Democrats most upset were some of his vetoes of housing policy, you know, because of all the housing crisis that was caused by COVID, landlord-tenant relationships. There were bills that Democrats really wanted that the governor vetoed. And so some of those might come up during our discussion.
Looking forward to it for sure. This podcast is dropping Wednesday afternoon. So, I mean, are there still tickets available if people want to go?
I think that, believe it or not, Ben, I think we're sold out.
Wow.
But you can still buy tickets to the live stream.
Awesome. Looking forward to it and looking forward to seeing what you can glean from him. You're such a great interviewer, John, so can't wait to see what news is broken during that event.
I hope a lot.
Wednesday evening at the National Automobile Museum. You can check out the F1 cars while you're there. John, thank you so much for coming on this episode of Ballot Battleground Nevada. We appreciate it.
Ben, thanks for having me. It's a real pleasure.
Special thanks to John Ralston, the CEO of the Nevada Independent, for coming by the studio to tape for Ballot Battleground Nevada. If you made it to the end of this episode, we really appreciate it, and we want to hear from you. If you have guest ideas, episode ideas, questions, comments, compliments, concerns, anything at all, feel free to shoot us an email to bjmargiott, M-A-R-G-I-O-T-T, at sbgtv.com with Ballot Battleground Nevada in the subject line. We would love to get your input as we work on building this show and booking more guests for this very busy election season. And if you have a minute, we'd really appreciate it if you left a rating and review. That helps the podcast show up higher in searches so more people can discover our show. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.